Tilehurst End podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Hello and welcome along to a very special Tilehurst End podcast where we sit down and talk to Reading's Academy Manager, Lee Heron. Thank you very much indeed for taking the time to join us for this show. And a bigger thank you goes to Lee for taking time out of his busy schedule. As you'll hear, he's got hundreds of young players to look after on a daily basis. But he sat down with us at the Medeski Stadium just before the Barnsley game in early February to give us his time and his thoughts on a range of topics, from his working with the late Eamon Dolan to what it takes to develop a player in 2017, the role of social media, and what is next for Reading's Academy going forward. Hope you enjoy it. I said I'm absolutely biased because I was there, but I think you'll enjoy it. It was a fantastic show, Lee, very open and honest. And again, thank you to him for giving up his time. And just before we launch in, I can't thank enough our Patreon contributors at patreon.com/thetilehurstend. They're one of the big reasons we keep going. That little bit of income that comes in, it really just gives you that little extra boot to go out and get these sort of interviews, to do these sort of shows. So thank you very much. If you're interested in joining, it's patreon.com/thetilehurstend. That's patreon.com/thetilehurstend. Whether it's £1, £10, £20, whatever you like, it really does make such a big difference to what we do here. So thank you very much to those of you who have already joined the cause. And if you are thinking about it, go on, why not? Anyway, without further ado, here is our interview with Reading's Academy Manager, Lee Heron.
The Tilehurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetilehurstend.com.
Right, I'm delighted to be back at the Medeski Stadium and joined by the club's Academy Manager, Lee Heron. Lee, thanks very much for taking the time to join the show.
No problem, thanks for having me.
But let's go back to the start for you. Yeah. How did you end up as Academy Manager? What was your career path? Did you sit going through school thinking, this is what I want to do one day?
Well, I've been at the club 17 years now. As of January, it was 17 years, so it's quite a long time. Those that know me know I've got no hair, but I had hair then, so I don't know how long ago it was, you know. So, I started really as just as a casual coach, really starting off in the game at an early age, sort of 24. Played some semi-professional football and so on before that, and just had a little bit of a passion for coaching. I wanted to get involved more in that, and at the time, Reading were just set up an academy here with John Stevenson. And obviously he had a community department as well. So I went in there and just did a bit of casual work. And from then the journey is taken me lots of different ways. It's through the community side of stuff. And then very early on in that, I got an opportunity to work in the academy as a part-time coach. And the academy today looks completely different to what the academy looked back then, let me tell you, you know. A lot more people now, you know, compared to back then. So now I started my association with the academy very early, so about sort of 15 years ago, and that was under Nick Hammond.
Was there ever a plan B for you if football coaching and working that sort of area didn't work out? You say you joined it at 24. What were you doing after you left school?
Yeah, well, I left school. I did I was playing at the time. I was playing for Basingstoke Town at the time and so on. So sort of non-league football and trying to hold a sort of a job down. But, you know, as everybody does, you're always passionate about a sport generally. And football was my passion. And, you know, never going to be good enough to reach the levels of, you know, top professional players. But playing good enough standard at semi-professional football, and just felt I wanted to get involved in it more, and the route obviously was coaching. In terms of plan B's, probably not too young for that. I don't even know if I have a plan B now. I get asked that question quite a lot, and everybody wants you to give an answer of this or that, and I would do this and I've got that. I don't think life works out like that all the time, you know. So, you know, just going back to the journey, started with Nick in the academy, but we're still doing work with the community side of stuff, and then became sort of full time there because the community side of the club was developing, and as the club in a whole, if you look 15 years ago where the club was and to where it is today, you know. So, and of course then Brendan Rodgers came in and worked closely alongside Brendan within the academy, and then became the community scheme manager, as it's called then. We turned that into a charity and developed the community side of stuff, still doing heavily involved in the academy side of stuff. And obviously got an opportunity then when Eamon Dolan came along to come along into the academy as assistant, you know. And then, of course, sadly, with the events over the last little period, it's led me, unfortunately, into the role that I am now as academy manager. So it's a lot of skills learnt along the way, not just football. And of course, when you're developing young players, it's much more than just about the ball as well, you know?
You mentioned Eamon, the legacy, the impact he's had on the academy is clear for everyone to see, even if you just look simply at the players who advanced through to the first team. But everyone we speak to, we had the pleasure of speaking to Jem Carrachan just before Christmas, and he was saying, you know, what a father figure he was and how he sort of really helped nurture them on and off the pitch. What are your memories of working with Eamon and what he was like and what sort of legacy he's going to have at this football club?
Yeah, Eamon is still quite raw for me, you know, because he was, and I've gone on record and said this many times, and, you know, he was for sure a really good friend, you know. We spent lots of time together over the sort of 10 years or so, you know, at work and away from work. So, you know, he was a great friend. And of course, he was a great leader as well, you know. And that rubbed off on everybody that came into contact with him. You know, he was, he's a tough guy, wasn't, you know, he not only would he challenge players, he challenged us as staff as well, you know. Which, you know, if you want to develop top players for Reading, you've got to have top staff and you've got to train them, you know, on and off the field too. So, you know, he was a great guy. Still emotional for me too.
Cause, yeah.
You know, it's not been that long and you miss him in lots of different ways. But he, you know, when we started under him, there was about five people in our academy, you know, and now we're into the 40s.
Wow.
50 full-time staff, you know. Developed massively. It was a fantastic learning curve for me to be able to work alongside him for the number of years that I did, and it put me in fantastic stead to take over, you know, the work that we all did together. And that was key for Eamon, because Eamon was always, of course, he was the figurehead of the academy as academy manager, but, you know, he knew that he had to have a good team with him. A team of people, you know, that were loyal, that were humble, that would work hard and would work outside the box. Because if you work for Reading, you have to work outside the box, you know, because you're competing not only as a club, but for sure and certainly today with the new rules in youth football, you are competing with the juggernauts of world football, not just European football.
And that's one of the key questions that I've always wanted to ask. What is it that makes Reading's academy so special? Because you look at it compared to a lot of other clubs around the country, the way we've been able to bring through players, not just into the first team, but you look at players that are, you know, we've got one coming back tomorrow for Barnsley and Angus McDonald. So many players that seem to come through and emerge into the first team ranks here and elsewhere. What is it that makes Reading's academy successful to this point, in your opinion?
I think, as I alluded to a moment ago, it's about special people, you know. It's about not having everything that maybe some of these bigger clubs have. That means you have to fight more. You have to think more cleverly of what you do. You have to be outside the box. Never say never, you know. Always believe in young players. Young people are the heartbeat of the world, you know. They're special and they can achieve phenomenal things if only you give them the opportunity and the chance. And you've got to challenge them within that also, of course. But, you know, we had and we have still a tremendous amount of loyal staff that go well and beyond for the club. With quality too, you know, you can have all the hard work and the blood and sweat, but you've got to have that intelligence and the quality and the ability to have a growth mindset. And I think, you know, we're being humble and, you know, trying to work with these players and never say never and keep relentlessly working with them. We've had success with that. But it would definitely be a focus on people.
How many people do you have coming through? How many young footballers do you have in the academy at any one time? Because we obviously get to see the end result and, the very small number of people that actually make it into the first team. But how many people, say at this moment, how many young footballers do you have on the books?
Good question. You know, we will have age groups that start from U9 up to U23. Okay. But of course, underneath that, we have what we call a pre-academy group. They start at 16. You know, it's fundamental that you get the building blocks early for the young players and give them opportunity to play.
Yeah.
From young ages, you know, it's not too much coaching, and it's about play, enjoyment, play. But we want to try and start to build early. So we give provision, we give opportunity for young players to have the chance to play at our club. So it's important that we do that. So, you know, we will also have what we call shadow groups, which sit just outside of each age group. So, you know, you're talking hundreds of players.
Wow.
You know, hundreds of players that we are focused on and evaluating and trying to help, you know, on a daily basis, really.
How do you handle recruitment into the academy? Because you talk about these hundreds of players from all these different age groups. I mean, is it a case of going along to sort of school matches, you know, Berkshire County matches or something? I mean, how do you handle it? Is it recommendations? Because I'm sure there'll be a lot of people out here listening that, you know, maybe they're, you know, they think, oh, well, you know, my son, or now, as we have daughter as well, with the women's football team doing so well, they want to get involved in the game. Mm. But, and I think they can make it. How do they get sort of into the academy? Is it a case of waiting to be spotted, or is it something they can do?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you said there is the conventional ways of traditionally of way, you know, people go to watch games and they view you, then they might ask for you to come in, and that clearly still exists. You know, today you have social media, which plays a major part in football too. So, you know, recruitment is pretty much everything. You know, there's you know, it's watching games, it's social media, it's sending parents writing in recommendations, it's contacts, it's working with other clubs, it's knowing the knowledge that's out there. It's everything. You know, recruitment is everything, and you have to turn every stone over because you don't know what's underneath it.
Absolutely. When you say social media plays a role, I mean, is that literally a case of people sending in, you know, clips, or just saying, I saw a fantastic player playing for today?
Yeah, for sure. Social media is a form of information, right? So the information is moving around. So, of course, you know, our recruitment team will be looking at different parts of social media and seeing what's being spoken about. And of course, people will put on clips and send us clips via that too. So yeah, for sure. And of course, technology is moving forward dramatically. So we can only see that really continuing.
Yeah, you talk about social media. I remember the first time many of us saw Liam Kelly was when that clip went viral. that fantastic goal. He was 15?
Yeah, 14? Yeah. So he was the one where he flicked, because he scored quite a few good goals,
he,
Liam.
He did, yeah.
So when he flicks the ball up, and that was him as an under 18.
Wow.
So he was probably 17 at the time, you know.
Fantastic. What advice then would you give to sort of parents or young footballers listening to this? What is the best way if they think, I've genuinely got a chance of making this, I really need to sort of kick on as a youngster, what any sort of advice you'd give to them?
Yeah, I think you've got to just have lots of different experiences, you know. I don't think you can narrow yourself down. It also depends on what age you're at, and you know, if you're at a very young age, you know, do you just focus on one sport, or do you engage with a multitude of sports? I think probably if you do the latter, it's probably better. You know, you've got to have that enjoyment. You've got to love the game, for me, and you know, you can never give up. You've got many cases here of young players that, you know, were told no elsewhere, maybe, or lots of people felt that they may not push on, but they do. So you can never say never. These young people have a habit of turning things around very quickly because, of course, they're developing.
Yeah.
You know, physically, mentally. It's a major journey for them. So, you know, you have to enjoy the game. You've got to want to play. You've got to understand that if you come into an environment like an academy, that it's not easy, it's tough. You know, sometimes maybe it's a little bit too tough for younger players. So there's lots of variables that surround it as well. But the enjoyment is key to it. And then it's finding an opportunity somewhere to play. And then you never know.
Absolutely. You mentioned earlier about the new rules that have come in. The Elite Player Performance Plan, I think, is about, three or four seasons in now. Reading
still a category one. We're going to be a category one academy for the next few years. People might be listening to this thinking, what is he talking about? Yeah. What is a category one? In very basic terms, sort of explain what being a category one academy means and the benefits of it.
I'm not sure how basic it can be, because it's quite complex. But so we're classed as a category one academy. And, you know, sort of 5 years ago now, really, they were changing the face of English football via the Premier League and the Football League and so on, in terms of trying to make sure that youth football is more accountable for what it's doing, you know, and to try and to produce more homegrown players. So EPPP came around. So it was a situation where all the clubs would pitch to where they felt they were at. So it's Cat 1 to Cat 4. Cat 1 being perceived to be the elite. And, you know, at that time, you know, we as a club, we were evolving as an academy too at that point. But it was a great opportunity for us to say to the club, listen, if we really want to be involved in developing and continue to do that, we need to become part of this EPPP Cat 1, and we need to go for the top one. And of course, that's a big challenge. It's a big challenge for Reading. So if you look along the Cat 1 clubs, as alluded to earlier, you know, you there's some huge clubs there, huge clubs.
What's the sort of cost difference between sort of being a Cat 1 and a Cat 2? Is there sort of
there's a minimum spend that you have to spend. I think it's about $2 million around that. That you have to spend on an academy at Cat 1. And then it's obviously diluted down through it. But, you know, it really challenged us at the time and actually made us so much better. So much better. You know, we're very, very pro the EPPP because how it's helped us as a club to develop, you know, and helps us as a club to compete with these big clubs week in, week out. And what it does is it allows us to be in a games program. So there's only 24 Cat 1s, you know, 92 clubs, 24. You know, obviously most are in the Premier League. And then you've got the likes of, you know, Wolverhampton Wanderers, Blackburn, Fulham, all huge clubs.
Yeah.
That you know, and a few others that sit outside of that. So, you know, we're honoured to be involved in that because we're in a games program where our players are being stretched every week. Every week.
They're taking on the very best.
They are, yeah, yeah. And it's a challenge for us. It's not easy. But we don't want it easy. It's not about having it easy. If we have it easy, it worry me. I need challenge. I need players to struggle. I need them to get through that. I need them to get as close to being ready to play in a first team as possible. And through that, we need to see adversity. We need to see resilience. We need to see them tested.
Am I right in thinking as well that being a Category 1 academy protects you from losing players to other clubs? Because I think when it first got announced, there were some other academies worried that, oh, it was just going to be a case of all the Cat 1 clubs coming in and just pinching their best young talent.
Yeah.
It, you know, you've seen it in operation 4 years. I'm not necessarily talking about Reading, but have you seen anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, it's a myth that you can't lose a player to, you know, another Cat 1 club, because that can happen. You know, compensation has to be paid between the two. And then the player can leave. So, yeah, I mean, that was a little bit of a myth. And you're right, it was murmured at the time, well, Cat 1's to Cat 1 movement won't happen. But no, it does happen for sure, okay. Across the country, yeah.
And what about in case of, does it allow you to maybe go and look at other younger players who are in Cat 2, Cat 3, Cat 4 academies?
Yeah, of course you can do that too. We don't generally have a major push on that, if I'm honest, from a recruitment department at the moment. We focus a lot on what we have in the building and to further develop that. Because, of course, you know, when you're trying to recruit players from other clubs, brings costs and so on. So you have to balance that out too, you know. So, you know, clubs do it. For sure, a lot of other Cat 1s will be recruiting off the Cat 2s and Cat 3s, and I'm sure the Cat 2s will recruit off the Cat 3s and 4s, so it's a natural sort of food chain, if you like, I guess, all the way through.
We've seen sort of a few examples, even recently, I can think of people like Harry Cardwell, Billy Collins has gone alone to Brighton. You know, there is a lot of actual movement that you do sort of notice at academy level. Who's in charge of that? I mean, is that something that you have to do in consultation with the app and the first team management, or is it, does it come down to you saying, I'm happy to move this academy player on?
Of course, we have, an academy management team, a group of people that meet regularly on the strategy, philosophy, values, and the development of the academy, day-to-day goings on in the academy. And of course, you have to have consultation with the first team for sure. And of course, Brian, the technical director, who I have a great relationship with, is a really good guy. We work closely daily talking about these issues, because, you want to develop players for your first team. That's our job to do that. And that's tough. It's not easy to do in English football. But of course, we want to get return on investment too. That's on the field. That's also, the players do at times get sold on, as we know over the years. Gilfie, Shane Long, Alex McCarthy, Michael Hector, Aaron Tishbola, and there's a lot of, and more that the club have, sold on and got value from. So that's great. But also, we have a duty of care to our players, that if it's not going to work out for them here, that we try and find them an exit route, because that's important to us. We're not just for the ones that are going to be excelling in the first team, because these guys could go away. Like you said, Angus McDonald will be back here, and fantastic for him, but he's come for our program, and there's many like him, so that's important to us too.
How hard is it when a player gets to that sort of 18, 19 level and you have to sort of tell them that it's not going to work out? What you sort of say, you plan exit routes for them. Yeah. Do you sort of work to try and find them another club after release them?
Sure. Or? 100%, 100%. We work extremely hard on that. It's important to us, as I say. These young players are great. They're good. Just because it doesn't work out here for them, it could work out somewhere else. And, we want to keep them in the game because, they're part of us, they're part of our academy and our club. And they always will be, Yeah, we'll do that. And to answer your question, how hard it is, it's desperately hard. It's desperately tough to tell a young player that it's not going to happen from here, especially if they've been with us since 6, 7, 8,
I suppose it's a lot harder for Reading as well, because if you're a club of the financial power of Manchester United, I suppose you might have that little bit more leeway to keep a few, maybe. Whereas, I suppose, with the financial realities of the football club now, you might be under... Are you under that little bit more pressure?
Yeah, as a Championship club, you're always under more pressure than the Premier League club, for sure, of course, financially, because that's just historical, as we know. We'll still do the right thing by the player, and that's... And I keep stressing that, because that's real close to my heart, that's important that we do that. And by the nature of having a programme where only a few succeed... if you look at our success rate, it's actually very, very good. But it also means quite a few don't too. So we've got to look after them.
Yeah, you talk about, obviously, there's a couple of hundred in the academy. Mm. It's just a numbers game, I suppose. You talk about, joining the club, over a decade ago. Life has changed. We talked about social media earlier. Social media didn't really exist a decade ago. You hear lots of unfortunate stories. I think bad news makes the press more, about footballers that have lost their way and maybe a case of too much too soon.
Of course.
How do you handle that? Is it more difficult, do you think, to bring through a young player now than it was 15 years ago?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, isn't it? I guess... my honest sort of approach to that, as I say, it probably is more difficult today. Young people are different from what they were 15 years ago to what they were 30 years ago. That's obvious, because of natural evolution of society and of us as a human race. So, yes, of course, because there's lots more variables around them. And of course, with, going back to the social media and you can access players and people, not just players, much, much more than you could ever before. You could hide away before. Yeah. You can't today. So it is tough. The English game is a global game, it attracts viewers from all over the world. So therefore it attracts players from all over the world. So, that then narrows off potentially for the younger players coming through. But, you have to embrace that And you have to use that as a positive and not harp on it as a negative. Because if you clearly and continue to do that, you'll get nowhere anyway.
Yeah, we talked... Sorry, I said we talked to Archie Lovell, the player who came through the old system, the old YTS system. And he was talking about, you know, sweeping the terraces, cleaning the boots, doing bits and things like that. I mean, it's stuff that I presume is gone from sort of the academy system. Do you think that that's a good thing, or would you... I mean, you say society's moved on. It's hard to, you know, put the genie back in the bottle.
Yeah.
Do you think it's good that that sort of ethic is gone?
I think what we have to do is find different ways for the young person of today, because, you know, the players of those, you know, 20, 30 years ago, that was what was accepted. So what is accepted today to ensure that they keep good values, you know, that they have good integrity, you know, ethically they're on the ball. You know, that they're part of this club and they understand what is required to be the next player in the first team or make it as a professional footballer, you know. So time moves on, you've got to change with time too, you know. And of course, you have to always look at some traditional values too, but we're moving forward, so we've got to move forward with it. And our job as coaches is to work out these young people individually, not collectively, individually, what they're about, what makes them tick, where I can challenge them, where I can put my arm around them. All those things that you might do in any setting is no different here. You've got to know about these people that you're working with, you know. And of course, you know, what we can't forget is that we walk down the streets and we'll see lots of young people, you know, 20, 21, 22 or whatever, you know, having fun or whatever and enjoying themselves and clowning around and stuff. That's the same age bands that are playing.
Yeah.
So the pressures on them are huge. But they're young. But they're only young people. So it's hard. It's not easy. So you have to take that into consideration too. So, you know, and to, you know, you hear a lot that football players get it easy. They certainly don't.
Do you think that do some get too much too soon in terms of the money and the financial rewards? Again, talking to Archie Lovell, I think he was talking about his first contract was £100 a week.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Nowadays, you can hear of, you know, players at top academies, you know, picking up thousands a week. I imagine, again, being in the Championship, it's not quite that extravagant down here. But do you find that adds an extra challenge as well, that players that are picking up a lot of money a week, to keep them away from things that they can spend that cash on?
But of course, again, as I said earlier, it's a lot to do with what the player's about. So how are they motivated? Does money motivate them? So if money motivates them, then, you know, that might work for them. If they love the game and they play for the love of the game and they don't worry too much about the money, then you've got to look at that aspect of what you do there. Of course, there potentially is too much too soon for young players in certain areas, and I'm sure the game as a whole is looking at that, and I know that they are, because if you give any young person lots of responsibility by giving them lots of money, we as society have to understand, well, they could go off the rails a little bit. Yeah. They could lose motivation. So again, I get back to, what do we do in this modern era then to protect that and move them forward, you know? So, yeah, you know, it is an area that you're constantly thinking about. You know, luckily for us, where we're at is that obviously we're not in that ball game compared to the majority that we compete against week in, week out. So we're hoping that, you know, as we develop as a club and as an academy, you can keep those values too. But of course, it's tough when you've got other clubs locally that might pay a lot more. It's an employer, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a professional game, I suppose, at the end of it. I'll throw in a question now from Simeon. He's asking, is the club looking more into international recruitment, or is that still cost prohibitive for a club our size?
Yeah, again, you know, you're always looking for the best talent that you can get in your academy domestically. And of course, you always look in the marketplace for talent that may well enter us from the international market as well, you know. And of course, we have to be very diligent with that and how we approach that. We wouldn't be, again, to the scale of most of who we compete against, but we would have a look at that. We would have a knowledge of it. And if it's right for us, we will look to do that. You know, Gilfy was a young player that came to us, you know, Shane Long and so on. So, it's not that hasn't been done before. It's not nowhere near done on the scale of other clubs and so on. But there's a mindset of it that you know you must try and always. We have a saying here: is to know what's in the building, but make sure you know what's outside the building. You know,
talking about bringing players into the football club. At the moment, we're at Hogwood Park, which is still a step up, I suppose, from when you very first joined. And I think we're still training at places like Bradfield College and the cricket ground and stuff like that. Yeah. So, I mean, it's been a great facility for us, but the club are keen to progress with the new training ground. Why is it so important that we get that move, and what sort of extra facilities is it going to bring for the club?
Well, I think, you know, you have to move again with the times. We were at Elm Park, now we're here. So the natural progression is, like you said earlier, we used to train at the hockey club, Sonning and what have you, and moved to Arborfield at Hogwood. And you know, the next stage to compete, you have to compete on all fronts in football, don't you? You know, you have to be able to attract. You need the best science in the building today too. And you need space and you need room because you're growing. So, you know, the natural development on that and movement on that is to go into, you know, a new training ground. And of course, from an academy perspective, as you're growing all the time, because you're coming up with new ideas, new ways of coaching, new methods of what you're doing. You have to educate the players in our academy too. You know, you have to replace their education that's lost when they come into us. It's certainly just not about playing on the grass. No. So there's a lot more. There's a science behind it. You know, there's the individual programs that all our players have to work to. So you need good facilities for that. And, you know, this new place will provide us with that. You know, you need indoor areas, you need 3G pitches, you know, floodlit areas. So it's, you have to keep up with the times, and this will certainly do that for us.
Yeah, fingers crossed, because the plans you've seen just look spectacular.
Yeah, fantastic.
So fingers crossed that can get done in the next few years and keep that Category 1 status. Another question we had from Robert Stephen was, is the current academy system the best way to develop young players? We sort of touched on the old sort of YTS system like that. Do you think that the whole scheme is working as it is, or do you think it needs a bit of an overhaul?
Yeah, I think, you know, the overhaul in terms of the hierarchy in youth football, they believe that they have started that process with EPPP, you know. I can only talk from our club perspective, because, of course, you can always do things differently. It's a very easy sort of concept. We can change things. We can do things differently. From our perspective, we feel that the changes currently and how we've been developing as an academy, and people need to understand too, is that from an academy perspective, we're a baby, you know, in terms of time. We've not been doing it a long time. You look at a lot of these other clubs, you know, Saints and so on, and people like that, they've been doing it for a good number of years in developing players, you know, consistently. Our program is relatively new, really. You look at cycles of players from 6, 7, 8, all the way through, you know, it's 10 odd years, you know. So we feel as a group of people that the system at the system at the moment is good. It's developing. Is it working? Well, who knows?
Yeah.
You know, because you never know. But we believe in our program that it's helping our players, and we're certainly seeing some real good factors and real good pointers to our younger players. You know, I'm talking our younger players. I'm talking sort of 14 down and so on. That's really come on due to the EPPP and how that's helped us as a club.
One of the other things with EPPP and the way the Premier League have done it is they've tinkered around a lot with that top young age group, if you want to call it. It used to be an under 21 league. Now it's an under 23 league. You've got the Checkatrade Trophy, where an academy side enters. Another question from Rob is, you know, if the opportunity were available, would an academy side playing at, say, Ishmian or Southern League level be welcome? So what's that about, the 7th, 8th tier down?
Yeah, for sure. It's really interesting, actually, because we were only talking about... Last week, we were only talking about what it would look like for our young players as a team playing, like, in the conference and the stuff like that. Obviously, the issue you have with those types of things is... And this is not really a question for me, it's a question for the authorities, really, but... you know, you have to respect the traditional element of, yeah, of our football in this country, and it's taken us a long way. You know, you have to understand that that's important to people, so you have to respect it. You know, and I know the Chequered Trade Trophy got a little bit of negative coverage over this season. So, yeah, I think, you know, there would be potential that that would help, but because again, it's a different experience. Yeah. As I said earlier, it's not doing the same all the time. It's being different, and you have to be different and give the players different experiences, different opportunities to put themselves out there to see how they cope. Whether or not that would happen on you know, so to say, it's not a question for me, but it's about experiences.
Do you think a return, again, another question, final question from Rob is, do you think a return to the old style reserve league be welcome? I mean, you used to have a real mix of sort of older pros, people working out from injury, and younger players. I know you're allowed to play a certain amount of above age players in under 23s, but do you see, you know, the old combination sort of thing? Would that benefit youngsters, do you think?
I would say that the new under 23 league, you know, and again, this is very, very, very new, as we know, you know, and it's been moved up to 23 because, you know, statistically it shows, I think, that players are making debuts in Championship and first team at 23.
Wow.
So the age group's moving up. So, of course, then you need to act upon that to make sure that you keep more players in the system for longer, because you've got to be careful. If you know, the crazy thing about football, and certainly in England, is that you're making judgments on players at such a young age. And there's so much going on in terms of their maturation, physical development, you know, their mental development, their social development. So much going on, but we're forced as an industry at times to make decisions maybe too early. So the 23s helps to expand that. And the competition is very good. It's, you know, you're playing against Tottenham, Arsenal, Chelsea, Man City, Everton. Do you know what I mean? So you're competing against them every week. So that level is very good. And of course, they'll have some older players in there too. But you also have games that you create outside the games programme to allow for other games that are not, you know, these official type of games.
These behind closed doors.
Yeah, that you provide too. So, you know, you play in the International Cup that we qualified for the first time this year. You know, we're playing Hertha Berlin and Atletico and... You know, when was the last time Reading played them at that level? Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And we learned so much from it as a group of people, players and staff. You know, that didn't happen before. You know, you're playing in a Premier League Cup that we had the pleasure of winning a couple of years ago against Man City, you know. And you're getting more games closer to what it might look like as a first team player, 40-odd games across the season with all the different competitions. And you've got to try and replicate that. You can never replicate first team football.
No.
You know, a lot of people say, "Oh, the 23s, it doesn't, it's not, it can't replicate." Well, of course it can't, because it's not, and it never can do. But you've got to build the steps to get there. You know, and you might fall down them sometimes. You've got to get back up and go again. So the variation is been quite good, and along this year with the Chequered Trade it was a tremendous tournament for us. You know, tremendous tournament. I know it got some negative, but let me tell you, for them young players and that experience that they did playing against seasoned pros and playing away at Yeovil, and we go down to 10 men in that environment, you know, after we came away, we looked at it and said, wow, you know, we've done really well tonight, but we've lost. But we'd have had some young players in there, you know, young Danny Loader, who's 16, and Josh Barrett and Tyler Frost, and a multitude of others that might not have ever played in a game of that magnitude with 10 men.
I remember seeing the home game here in the competition, and I can't remember his name, but the Yeovil striker came on.
Yeah.
He was a proper old-fashioned striker. And I was sat there thinking, this is a great test
for
the defence.
This is reality.
Because you don't necessarily, I suppose, at that level, you maybe not get the sort of physically developed old-fashioned strikers to defend against.
Of course, you don't. And... You know, it was a great test. It was an exciting opportunity for our young players, and one that you wouldn't give up again, knowing that you'd been through it. You know, and also it gave an opportunity for the you know, Yeovil, Portsmouth, and Bristol Rovers, and so on that we played, to play some younger players too, give them opportunities. So I don't think you could be too negative on it. You know, for us, bigger picture, very positive.
Absolutely. You talk about replicating first team football, that the traditional route has been sending players out on loan. Who decide? Is this a decision that you make in conjunction with Brian and Yap about which players go out on loan?
Yeah, we again in this industry, you know, in whatever industry, and you're talking about the business every day. You know, you're talking about the business every day. So, again, as I said, you know, close communication with Brian and the requirements of the first team. And then it's where that player's at in their individual development. And what's the next stage? What's right for them? We obviously have Ledge, who's our loan manager.
Yeah, Mikhail Ledgerwood.
Yeah, Mikhail Ledgerwood, who is our loan manager. And his job is to then go out and find places for these players. He'll then have a team of people that then will report back to us. So okay. We'll go and visit them at the training ground, speak to the managers, go and look at the accommodation they're at. Go and watch the games, do reports. It all comes back into us, and then we will view how they're doing as a player. You know, so it's very much individualised for what's right. We feel was right for them at the time.
Have you got to balance as well? I suppose the needs of the under 23s to have good players to play alongside, because I suppose you don't totally want an under 23 side made up of 17, 18 year olds.
Well, yes and no. You know, listen, an under 23 result is irrelevant. Ultimately, the only important result, as we all know, is a first team result. You know, our job is to develop the players. So if I've got more experienced players out on loan, you know, Zach Jules has just gone out, Rob Dickey was out, Dom Hyam, you know, Jake Cooper. You know, we've got some very, very good, Jack Stacey, we've got some very, very good players that are out on loan doing very well. Craig Tanner doing excellent in first team football in this country. We want to then blood the next group of those. So if we are a little bit younger, that's not a problem. Actually, it excites me because it shows progress and development. Of course, you want to try and win games at 23 level, but actually, do you know what the most important thing is? If I see a 16-year-old playing out there against a 20-year-old, I know special stuff's happening for our 16-year-old, you know?
You talk about the relationship with the first team, and the aim is to provide players. You've obviously had the pleasure of working under several different managers now. How much interaction do they have? I mean, we'll stick with the current for the time being. How much interaction does Yap have? Does Yap and his staff come down and say to you, I would like the academy sides to be playing this kind of football to make them for the first team, or do they just sort of give you more of a free rein?
Yeah, I think, you know, with the guys that are here now, you know, they're fantastically respectful. Great people, clearly very good at what they do, but great people, firstly, you know, very inclusive. I mean, luckily, you know, we've always had a methodology within the academy, certainly at the top end, because the methodology will change as the player gets closer to the first team. You know, at the younger ages, we have a methodology where we call it me and my ball. So we don't encourage passing.
Okay.
We just want players to dribble and be creative 1v1s. And hopefully the fans will, in the next sort of 5-6 years, are going to see a little bit of different special players coming through. Yeah. So, you know, and as we're closer we get, it's more of a possession-based game with that creativity, that 1v1 excellence and so on. So, you know, we've always been trying to do that. And, of course, that's the manager's philosophy too. So, you know, what he's helped us to do at that top end sort of 18s and 23s is to take on some of the detail that the first team are currently doing to implement that into to those players. So we'll have that dialogue. You know, we have a technical board meeting which consists of the senior staff members that will dictate what we're looking to do, you know. But they're very respectful, for sure. Of what we're trying to do, and very helpful. You know, we'll get they watch pretty much every under 23 game. You know, they'll watch the training of the young ones. We'll talk regularly about the young ones with all the staff. They will only last week we had what we call an in-service training day, where the first team staff will give us a presentation on the philosophy and the evolution of the philosophy and how we can continue to work through. So there's a lot of stuff going on, you can say.
There's a lot of coordination.
Yeah, for sure, to align it up. But, you know, ultimately, you know, you have to work with people, and these guys are, you know, Yap and all the staff are fantastic.
Do they give a lot of the younger players exposure to first-team training? Do they invite a few into that?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Most definitely, yeah. Very, very proactive on that. Very proactive.
Excellent. Matt Castle wants to know a question that I'm sure lots of us would like to ask. I mean, are there any young players in our academy that you're particularly excited about? So obviously, all of them have got something about them or they wouldn't be here. But any particular names that maybe not necessarily just below the first team, but younger down?
Yeah, I mean, as I alluded to with the philosophies, about 8 years ago, Eamon said to me, listen, we need to be ready for the future. So we need to change what we're doing at the younger ages and get more creativity in the body and in the mind. So that's when we rejiggled what we were doing at the time and then created these philosophies where the younger ages, me and my ball, you know, and it's that skill, that 1v1 as I spoke about. And as we go through, the philosophies change up to you get to the top. And as I said, it's, you know, possession based, sharp end, it's survival, it's the result, it's everything. So we would like to think that where we're at now, that the academy for the younger ages is best equipped, more equipped than it's ever been. You know, we're and of course lots can change. You know, we had our under 10s win the national championships. So for Reading to win a national championships when mostly it's, you know, Chelsea's, Man City's and people like Man United's and so on, for us to win win those competitions, and our under 14s won Knight Cup a few years ago at Wembley against, it shows where we're moving.
Are there already players at that age that you can say, I think there's something about him? Have you seen players, again, you don't have to name names, but have you seen players even at that young age thinking, I think this guy's going to make the first team?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you never know. There's lots of stuff happening. Of course you'll have an opinion, and whether that is a theory of what you've seen previously. So for me, when I speak to staff, and we just had a meeting this morning on a group discussing where we see all the players at, 'cause that's what we do. You know, you try and use your experience. So I can say, well, I remember what Jordan Abita looked like at that age, and he did this and he did that. Now, that you cannot align that with every player.
No.
Because, of course, everybody's different. But it gives you it, what you have to do is draw on your experience, you know? Liam Kelly. What was Liam Kelly like? What did he look like? What does that player look like? How do they marry up? How does, you know, the physical data marry up at that age? Because we have all of that. So we all put that in a little bit of a pot, stir it up and see what comes out of it through debate, through using the science part of it and then the opinion side of the game as well, you know? So I think a good measurement is what people say about you outside of your club, not what you're saying about yourself inside. You know, we're very humble and we've had a little bit of success, but we've got to keep working hard and work harder and smarter. But the reputation of the academy is very, very good across the country, you know. We often get asked to do presentations and on what we're doing to the Premier League and Football League and so on. So, you know, we're seeing some areas that, you know, we're one of the most innovating academies in the country. So we've got to keep that going. So you never know with these young people, you know.
No.
You don't.
You talked about Liam Kelly. He's a player that's had such a fantastic impact on the club this season. And we talked earlier on the interview about, you know, the hype that was around him when, you know, those videos went viral. But there was a bit of a quiet period in the middle where it almost didn't seem that Liam was going to make it. I remember he went out to Bath City. I think it was like last season, this time last year, he was there.
Yes, that's right.
And it did look like, okay, well, maybe he's not going to make it. Suddenly, new manager comes in and it's all changed around for him. Did you always have that belief that Liam was going to make it and he just needed the chance?
Every young person, every person in life needs an opportunity. And sometimes you don't get that opportunity, sadly. Sometimes you do. Sometimes you get it when you don't expect to get it. But you've got to be ready. Mm. Liam was always ready. You know, as he's shown to everybody now, you know, he's a fantastic footballer. And Liam always had been. Just needed the opportunity and maybe a style of play that suited Liam. And, of course, with the manager now, he's got that. And he's shown what he can do.
Do you think his the you know his physical nature? I'm sure he won't be a case. You know, he's on the shorter side, not as you know massive as other players come, especially in a midfield position where it's traditionally been a lot of bigger players. Do you think that maybe held him back in a couple of other managers' eyes?
Listen, maybe I don't know, but I guess you have to look at also what's in the building at the time and how you know the system of play and what and so on. But I think you know collectively, you know. My job and our job is to make sure that you keep young players like that. And that's why I alluded to earlier in terms of, you know, you make decisions on players too early. Well, you have to keep a Liam Kelly around until hopefully a Yapstam comes along, maybe. That might work for him, you know, because, of course, one of the most guaranteed situations in football is that managers change for one reason or another. And you have to have people ready in the building that that manager might like. And, of course... Liam suited the manager now, and his qualities are coming shining through. And yeah, he is on the smaller side, but you know, historically, you look at top players, at the top players of the world, and you look check their heights out, and you'll find
Lionel Messi.
There you go. You know, you'll see that those weren't giants of the game. And of course, what you have to do is you have to use those to your advantage, which he does fantastically well. And now, if you look at him out there, he looks a man.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolute top talent. And it's, again, just another cracking example of all these players that have come through the academy. And there's that fantastic picture on the outside of the stadium of Eamon and all of those players that have come through the ranks.
And you have to, you know, you have to. You know, Liam and you know, we've also had this year, obviously, Tanai Watson pop up, Dom Samuel, you know. So, again, it's just moving the next couple through the building. And, you know, these guys have been with us for a long time. So they love the club. You know, have affinity to the club. It's important to them. And that's what we try and instill in the young players, have that passion about Reading. It's a special place, you know. And, it's, you know, I've been here 17 years, you know, and... You love the club. I choose to work for the club because it's such a great place. It's got great people in. You love it. It's in your blood, you know, and that's the determination that we have every day to keep trying to develop our young players.
Absolutely. A couple of questions and then I'll let you go because you're a busy man with a couple of hundred people to look after. One area that we've been fantastically blessed, again, looking at the academy, you know, we've had some international quality goalkeepers, Alex McCarthy. You've had defenders like Alex Pearce, Jake Cooper, midfielders, Liam Kelly. The one area that doesn't quite seem to be coming through is the striker department. Now, we've got Dom, he's gone out to Ipswich and he's obviously scored a couple of first team goals, but generally, the club seems to be struggling to produce that top striker to come through. Is that the hardest position to bring through, or is it just a case of just not things not working out? Is it just random luck of the draw?
That's a good question, isn't it? You know, and to give you a good answer, it's probably not straightforward. But yeah, I mean, you know, you need people to score goals, don't you? You know, I think, you know, we had Shane Long.
Yeah.
So there's one. You know, Kanu, he'd had spells up playing as a centre forward and had scored goals.
Simon Church,
he'd scored goals. So
Charlie Austin, who was here and left.
As a young player under Brendan and so on. So, you know, I think once you go through them, you'll see that there are some there. If you look at, you know, Shane Long's scored 100 goals of late and has been doing it all around the country. You know, the challenge is for us is to see where the next ones are, you know. Dom Samuel's come in this year and has done a bit now, has gone out on loan to see if he can do it there. But, yeah, you know, I think that it is a difficult position, but they're all difficult.
Yeah,
positions to develop, and everybody wants a clinical, top of the range striker, and everybody's searching for that. You know.
Yeah, I suppose that there's limited positions. You see, a lot of teams now are only playing with one striker or you know players out wide. That sort of traditional striker almost is a dying sort of breed.
Well, yeah, it's what a centre forward looks like in today, and what system he plays in, and how he. He operates in that system, you know. So I'll speak to the staff and see if we could churn some more centre forwards out for everyone.
Excellent. That'd be great. Because you just love one of your own, as you sing in the East End, you know, he's one of our own and banging home the goals.
It's great, isn't it? You know? And of course, you've got, you know, you forget, you still have, you know, Jordan Abita, who's the appearances that he's made for the first team now. Started with us at 7 years of age, you know. Great stories.
Do you guys get, just to finish with, do you guys get targets from those above? Do you say, I want to see, you know, two or three out of every crop make it into a first team squad? Is there that sort of thing? Or is it very much a case of just do your best and we'll see how it goes?
I think there's always, we put pressure upon ourselves to try and get people through the door, you know, and knock the door down. I was just thinking there, we're talking about strikers again, it's just, you know, Simon Cox.
Yeah.
You know, there's another one.
Just banged out, what is it, 100th league goal for Southend?
So when you... Sorry to go back on that, but I just remind myself of that. There is more than people probably perception that there is. So, we put pressure on ourselves to develop players. Of course, ultimately, it's down to the senior management team at the time to see if it fits right for them. You know, we will have some internal targets that we set ourselves, because you need to set yourself targets to strive forward. And give yourself the best opportunity to reach those targets, and you know they will vary upon season depending on the makeup and the composition of the squad. You know, so yeah, for sure we will have processes in place, and all our departments that you know, because it's not just about football, your psychology and the welfare, the education, and you know, so on. That will all have sort of departmental targets that they need to achieve, and in order to make sure the function of the academy is working to the maximum.
Yeah, and I'll just end by saying this, as great as it is to see players make it through to the first team as well, I think what's equally heartwarming is when you see the work they do in the community, these younger players going out to local schools and doing things like that. And again, it's not, they're the stories that maybe don't necessarily make the headlines and grab stuff, but I think that from my own personal point of view, and I'm sure a lot of listeners would agree, it gives us a massive sense of pride as fans, the work you guys are doing out there and the people, not just footballers, the people you're bringing through. And I think it's a tremendous credit to the football club and yourselves.
Yeah, you need the fans. The fans are the life of the football club. It's so important to us, you know. So important to the young players that they know that they've got that support behind them, because it really, really helps. You know, we all want to feel good about ourselves. And, you know, it's great, you know, going back to social media, when the young players might go on there and put stuff and then they get some good comments from fans and keep up the good work. Please, everybody know how important being positive and helping these young players to succeed in a really tough environment is key. The fans are this football club, and they always will be, long before we're all moved on and gone. There'll be another set, you know. We all got to rule in this together to try and make this fantastic football club the best it can be.
Absolutely, and I think can think of no better way to end the interview than that. Lee, fantastic speaking to you for the last hour or so. Thank you very much for giving us your time, and fingers crossed, I'm sure we'll be singing your praises for the next few years when we are watching those players tread out onto the Medeski turf.
We'll all do our best, and it's snowing now, and that's a good ending
though. Exactly that. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
@ The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/ The Tarlhurst End.